This is Looking Forward, conversations about the future of work, brought to you by MillerKnoll.
Hey friends, what's your perception of the future of cities? Like me, you've probably seen articles predicting the end of downtown business districts due to remote work. But is that really the case? And beyond the increase of remote working, what other factors are affecting how cities are evolving around the world? Today, we dive into this topic with two experts in urban futures, Lovisa Volmarsson and Carsten Beck from CIVS, the Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies. CIVS is an organization known worldwide for helping governments, businesses, NGOs, and individuals plan differently for the future. At MillerKnoll, we're working with them on this topic of the future of cities. We're engaged with them in foresight strategy, meaning we're working together to help envision and plan for the future. And we do so through a process known as scenario planning, which is a fancy way of saying that we invent stories based on real trends that are meant to provoke maybe more than predict. By testing these stories against one another, we can better understand how the future might unfold, or even better, how we can help to shape a better future together. Today, we'll be diving into this topic of the future of cities, the trends that are affecting them, and most importantly, how we can all be more purposeful in thinking about the future of cities that we want to co-create. Oh, and before I forget, you can access their information at civs.dk. That's CIFS.dk. And you'll also see their work reflected in insights coming from us at MillerKnoll. So enjoy this conversation on the future of cities with Lovisa and Carsten from the Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies. Hello, Lovisa and Carsten. Welcome to the podcast. I am so pleased to have you on today. Maybe we can start by having you tell us a little bit about you and what you do and about the Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies. Lovisa, let's start with you.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us. We're super excited to continue this conversation on future cities. My name is Lovisa and I work at Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies. I have a background in architecture. So what I do mostly is actually work on the topics around urban futures, what the cities might look like, how urban governance might look like, generative cities, all things that sort of around architecture, design, cities. It's something that I spend my time on a daily basis.
Carsten, want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. Hi, Ryan. It's great to be here. My name is Carsten and I'm a colleague of Lovisa's, obviously working here at the Copenhagen Institute for Future Studies. The short version of that is CIFS. We are this weird combination of a think tank and an NGO with a huge, huge interest in everything related to the future. And we've actually been working with the future for 54 years, founded back in 1969 by a former general secretary of the OECD. And what is so super cool about CIFS and the future at large, and also the topic we will be discussing today, the future of cities, is on my part, and I'm an economist, I'm sorry to say, is to have this multidisciplinary approach to the future. And that goes for cities, for technology, for people, for consumers, all the topics that we will discuss here today. Because actually, one of the things I think we see way too often in future studies and in futures discussion, it becomes too one-dimensional. And what we try to achieve is to be super explorative, I would say, and try to have these multidisciplinary conversations about the future. And the future, of course, as you know, Ryan, it's not about predicting. It would be, I'm not sure whether it would be fun to predict anything, actually, but it's not about predicting. It is actually about having these conversations about what might happen and how can we as societies and cities, how can we change and adapt the future?
What a fun set of jobs. Being so focused on the future. And I know we don't want to predict the future. I certainly people do all the time. And I think there's a steady stream of headlines around what's happening in the future, which trend, in my opinion, towards doom and gloom. But you both have been wonderful partners to me and my team as we think about the future of cities. So it's so fun to have you both on today. Well, let's start here. The pandemic has certainly brought a lot of interest and a lot of concern around the future of cities, particularly in light of increased remote working. What types of changes are you seeing in cities around the world? And is remote working really the end of the central business district for our cities?
Just to be on a positive note here to begin with, it's not the end of anything. Is it the potential for huge shifts? Absolutely. I guess one of the things we see here at SIFTS when we discuss the future of offices, the future of downtown business centers, is that we, on a global scale, actually see this not liberation, but at least a discussion about all the habits that we took for granted until 4 years ago. I mean, I'm an old guy. I'm 55 years old. I've been used to working in a fixed way, in a fixed office, and of course, with lots of wonderful clients and partners, you included, Ryan. And all the time, there's always been this potential to change things, to change the concept of time and place and changing dimensions of cities. And for some reason, maybe because there's too many old men being grumpy about the future, the changes haven't happened. But now, also due to Corona, which was, of course, super bad, and it would have better that we did not have that experience, it is as if across the globe, at least we are starting to have this discussion. Why are we having the habits around work and also entertainment and retail and family life, everything? And why can't we actually change them? And what we see in many of our surveys, both the European and also global, is that lots and lots of people, they have this huge, huge focus on flexibility and processes and concepts that are sort of catered to the individual needs. Is it new? I wouldn't say so. But now at least we are starting to experiment a little bit more. And could there be a downside to that in the business districts as they are today? Probably. And I mean, we see some of those numbers actually from the States being pretty almost scary. But I also see this as a huge opportunity to experiment. And that's good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that comes to my mind, and it's just from my own personal experience living in Chicago for so many years, is that it's not uncommon for cities to go through cycles where, oh, it's all about the suburbs. Nope, now it's all about the central business district. And sometimes when the central business district slows down, it creates affordability for people to live in the city that want to live in the city that maybe otherwise couldn't have, which may in fact create a certain degree of balance between commerce and livability to an extent, don't you think?
Absolutely. The city is not a concept that is given. Now, Louisa, you're actually the expert here. Mm-hmm. But to me, it is something that we change and we change it together. How that process evolves, I guess that will depend on which city we are talking about. And I'm actually, once again, so sorry. I'm super excited about this. Let me just tell you a small story. We have a colleague, Louisa and I, called Klaus. He came to me before Corona and said, Carsten, now forget all this about digital and smart and blah, 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 and whatever we have. In the future, the big defining question will be, why should people meet physically? Why is it people will see a value in a physical meeting in a city setting across our lives? And when Klaus said that, I thought, okay, that's simply weird, because of course we need to meet. Of course we will go to the store. Of course we will go to et cetera, et cetera. And as you probably guessed, Ryan, mm-hmm. he was spot on the money, Klaus. For me, I've taken that with every other question about the future as being, I mean, one of the key elements. Why is it that Louise and I, great colleagues as we are, why is it that we meet physically in a building in downtown Copenhagen 3 times per week? I enjoy it a lot, Louisa, but how about you?
I mean, I think coming also for the field of architecture, collaboration is just such sort of ingrained in our practice. So, I mean, I go to work because I like to spend time with my colleagues and I like to collaborate with you guys. So, I mean, for me, it's quite natural that you should meet in person. But I mean, I think it's also just raises a completely other question, like what are cities for? Like what will the city be for in the future? Like if we're talking about, okay, we won't work in the city, we won't shop in the cities. So it's the city is going to be, you know, like this place where we go to be entertained. And how is that sort of sustainable in the long run? So I think it's, when I think about the future city, the question that always comes to mind is, what will the city be for in the future? Mm. And I think that's something that we could really have pushed that discussion a lot further than we tend to do, because we tend to sort of, yeah, but then it will be a smart city. And then it's like, what does that even mean? And then we, you know, technology and everything comes into play. And I think that, what would the city be for in the future? And who will live in the city is also a great question that I think is something that we could really push the dialogue, especially when we talk about future, and sort of explore that a little bit more and be maybe even a little provocative, when, because do we want the present to just continue, or do we actually want something different in the future? And then how can we establish that kind of movement toward something, a city that might be more inclusive, affordable, regenerative? Like when I give presentation around the future city, I usually like, okay, so if you Google future city, what kind of images pops up? And it's like, you know, it's the like, it's completely sci-fi. It's, you know, high rises, it's glass, it's steels, it's flying cars. Is that it? Is that really a city we want to live in the future? Mm-hmm. And like, so I think the whole dialogue of what the city, what kind of city we want in the future is super important to have, because it has such an effect on how we live our lives. So what city do we want to strive for?
Yes, what a wonderful question. That's something that we as individuals and communities and businesses can all ask, because I think it is probably a mistake to just assume that the status quo of cities, or I shouldn't say the status quo, but maybe where we were in 2017 or 2019 is ideal. There have certainly been issues. I do want to pause and ask you, Lovisa, you've used the term regenerative city a couple of times. When we first met, that was a new term for me, and I'm guessing it will be for a lot of our listeners. Do you mind unpacking it a little bit?
Regenerative city would be like one step further from the sustainable city. Because when we talk about sustainability, it's sort of, you know, decreasing harm, stopping the progress of, for example, climate change. But when we talk about regenerative cities, we're talking about a city that's a system that's sort of also not only healing things, but also giving back. It's kind of like systems we find in nature, like cell renewal or like a forest after a fire. It's something that's is adding value and not sort of subtracting it or sort of slowing down, that you could say like a sustainable city would be. So it's just a step further from sustainability, where the city would actually work with nature, like with the system that it's so dependent on.
I'm smiling because it's a wonderful vision. It's a provocative idea. Is it mostly, when you say regenerative, is it mostly around environmental sustainability, or are we talking social systems and other things as well?
I mean, I think when we talk about future city, we can't limit the idea of regenerative to just, or even just sustainability, to the sort of environmental issues. We also have to talk about social sustainability or regenerative practices within that environment, or economics, because we can't really subtract, like everything is interconnected. So in some sense, we do need to talk about everything, because a city is a system of systems, right? So when we talk about cities, we tend to like focus on like the city boundaries, where we see the sort of city ending. But it's not. I mean, the city is sort of connected to so many systems outside of that. We're talking about agriculture or like all the other things like electrical grids, internet grids. There's so many systems that connected that the city depends on. So I think that's also where the sort of regenerative idea comes in, that we need to think about how interconnected everything is and make sure that those system actually works and provides and also gives back.
Mm-hmm. Are there examples of cities you see that are farther down the path than others?
Well, here's the tricky question, because I think that people are giving it a lot more attention, because to me, it's still an utopian idea. Like we are still talking about what is the regenerative, like how does it actually work? And like, so I think it's more of a line of thought or a concept right now. And also, I think it's very difficult, because the regenerative is being thrown into different architectural projects. But then it's like, is it actually regenerative, or are you just using it because you know it will attract a lot of attention to it? So I think it's in the sort of beginning of actually becoming something. But to be honest, I don't know if a concrete example of this is actually a regenerative neighborhood or building or city. But I'm super excited to see when it, hopefully, there will be some examples out there. I think that would be super exciting.
Awesome. It's something that we can all work towards, and maybe a new lens for us to use when we look at cities. It also makes me think a little bit about the question of like, who's really driving the change within any given city? You know, is it commercial interests? Is it city planners? I'm sure it's a combination of both. I know that in many locations around the world, there's a different concept emerging focused on how we can plan cities with closer adjacencies to where people were doing the activities you described, Lovisa, when you asked the question, what are cities for? You know, working, living, entertaining, this idea of the 15-minute city. Can we unpack that concept a little bit for those that maybe aren't familiar with it?
Well, 15-minute city would be that you live in a city where within 15 minutes you have access to the services and work and entertainment and your home, everything is within 15 minutes. And I think that what driving the conversation around 15 cities is a lot about human scale. It's about, you know, walkable streets. It's about good public spaces. So it's a lot around livability, like creating a city that's good for people to live in.
Excellent. Yeah. When I begin to think about, as an example, some of the large U.S. cities, and I recognize that on the topic of office occupancy and the effects of remote work, that the effects may be much more pronounced in some big U.S. cities than a lot of other cities around the world. It makes me wonder whether or not a concept like 15-minute city could at least take hold on some sort of level. But I imagine it's extremely complex for a city rather to go from an existing way of being organized to somehow having these greater densities and greater adjacencies between all of these things. So this probably takes years, right?
I mean, I don't know. I think that's also because, I mean, I grew up in a small town and now I live in Copenhagen and I actually feel like I live in a 15-minute city. It takes me 20 minutes to walk to work. I have everything I need in my neighborhood. Mm. But also I have a feeling that maybe a lot of places is kind of a 15-minute city, but we haven't called it that before. It's the traditional idea of a neighborhood, kind of. And I know that a lot of cities might not have those qualities, but I mean, at least I think Copenhagen is unintentionally somewhat a 15-minute city because it's also very small. Like, I think that might have something to do with it.
Karsten, let's shift to you for a second. What other kinds of changes are you seeing in cities, or what kind of new ideas around, whether they're utopian or maybe less so, about developing cities in different ways catches your attention? What are you seeing and thinking about these days?
Very good question, Ryan. But one of the key elements that I'm working on right now in a number of European cities is how to create collaborative models of neighborhood development, often based on thinking around physical retail disappearing or changing rapidly, and thus creating city spaces or even shopping centers where all the activities we used to have are gradually disappearing. And one of the key stumbling blocks for us, it would be SIFs and our partners, is that it's kind of easy to get ideas because I can just ask Louisa about ideas and she'll give me 10. And I have another 10 and Ryan, you will have another 10. And we all experienced that over the last 3 months. But to get it to work in real life and to get a business model up and running around these new ideas and concepts, when we talk about neighborhoods, when we talk about high streets and when we talk about shopping centers, that is not easy. That is super, super difficult. I mean, just this morning, I was talking to two of our partners here at SIFS about exactly this concept. And one of them says to me, yeah, and then Karsten, you know, all the churches, they're empty as well here in Denmark. It was a Danish conversation, eh? And I'm like, yes, that's a super good point. And let's try to integrate the space of the churches, which we have in all cities, of course, here in Denmark, into the sort of wider city life. And good idea. But who's paying? Who's renovating? Who's making sure that whatever kind of activity actually makes sense? I'm an economist, as I said. You need to talk to the investors. You need to talk to the owners of different buildings and the different assets we have in the city. And I think without sounding too harsh, I think there's also a lot of conservatism there. We know how to do this. We know how to plan. We know how to make pricing strategy for rents and all of that. And we know how to do this. And then as these new ideas gradually move in and people sort of recognize we need to discuss this because cities, they are changing. To actually get the new models going is super, super difficult. So there I feel there's some work left to be done. And then I'm also, another thing, it's a good question, Ryan. who's in charge? Who should decide? Mm-hmm. We had a super good conversation this morning, Louisa and I, about smart cities and who's making strategies for that, or is it just a buzzword and all these things. And one of the things that's always on my mind is, okay, the future, however we define it in all our cities across the world, is that basically something that we do individually in the local community based on whatever tools that we have to our disposal? Or is it more of sort of a planned approach? And the planning could be authorities, city authorities, national authorities. It could be money, the market. And this dilemma for me, maybe it's not even a dilemma. It's just a question. I think that's going to be extremely important. And then one final thing, because building on that, often when we have this discussion and also the discussion about collaborating and all of that, there's often this perspective that the citizens of cities or building apartment blocks or whatever have in the suburbs, that they will take an active approach. They will go out and they will change things and they will et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm always, maybe because I'm just lazy, I'm always siding with the people that are less enthusiastic and are sort of just having a good everyday life, maybe in the 15-minute city. But, you know, the average people in the average city are struggling a little bit with the economy, struggling a little bit with the family, don't having time to do all the things he or she wants to do. That type of citizen, I would imagine, is the majority of us. At least it's me. And how will they actually position themselves in a world where, yeah, either it's bottom up or top down, maybe some combination. And what I'm probably trying to say is that the top down approach will probably be acceptable to a lot of these people.
Mm-hmm. I think you were being kind of funny when you said that it was because you're lazy, because I know you and I know you're not lazy, but you're right. People probably, unless they're having, you know, they're listening to this now or they're having conversations about this, probably have not stopped in the context of their daily life to ask the question, what's my role in changing this city? What could this city potentially be? Or back to our other question before, what's a city really for? And you mentioned the concept of smart cities, which is another one that I think we should unpack. That one's a little more familiar to me because I focused on technology research for so much of my career, but it's a nebulous concept. That one I know doesn't have an exact definition, but let's try to unpack it a little bit for our listeners.
Yeah, and as I said earlier this morning, Luis and I, we actually had that discussion because obviously there's a little bit of hype cycle going on with smart cities. It emerged as a concept a couple of years ago and basically building on new digital tools and platforms and data streams, we could create more efficient or better outcomes of whatever service a city needs to provide in the future. And as we see it and as we discussed it, it's sort of a lot of Lego bricks right now that need to be merged into one sort of cohesive system, and we are not there yet. I mean, there's a lot of discussions going on right now about data sets and all the AI thing happening, etc., etc. But this approach where we take it step by step and maybe try to see, okay, one simple mega trend, the aging of our populations, then we probably have data sets on from the healthcare sector, from their homes, their consumption patterns, their mobility patterns, logistics, all of that, and trying to sort of solve one Lego brick at a time is where I feel we are at. So we are having lots and lots of changes in, say, in healthcare. That would be a super good example. In many, many cities, we are saying we need to keep people away from hospitals because the hospitals, they are overburdened already. We simply cannot keep on going, doing what we're doing today. So we need to have a radically different approach to health. And if we, as we see in many European cities, if we are talking about keeping old people away from nursing homes and away from hospitals, that means that the only solution that's sort of left will be to stay in your home in the city. I mean, most people live in the city and that will just continue going forward. And the only way we can do that is if we have smart solutions. The only way we can achieve that goal, the same goes for mobility, lots of other spheres of interest for the city as well. But I still feel, it's also a political discussion. This is not easy. I still feel it's this one Lego brick at a time. And in a perfect world, and God forbid we ever get to that, a perfect world, of course it would make sense to have one system to rule them all, one ring. And as you can hear in my tone of voice, I'm not sure that is a good idea. And Louisa is laughing at me right now. I can see her face. But that's some of the problems we're facing.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about what I've seen and what we've seen in our research, because there's concepts of smart cities, but there's also smart districts and smart buildings. And I think for me, if I look at the world of commercial real estate as an example, maybe the initial focus was very much on the technologies that were employed to, like within a building, manage lighting or air quality, et cetera. But it quickly turns to, Is there data that can be brought together to create some sort of actionable data strategy? So when I think of smart cities, like Singapore comes to mind. Actually, Singapore comes to mind when I start thinking regenerative cities too, but obviously a tight geography, a fairly high degree of control. I know they've used data to look at things like how do we get emergency responses like ambulances to people quickest based on traffic patterns. But it assumes that somebody knows what to do with the data. And so whether it's a city like Singapore or a district like Hudson Yard, the development complex in New York, or even a building like the Edge is in Amsterdam and elsewhere, it's one thing to have smart technologies that are producing data. It's a whole nother thing to normalize that data, take a look and say, what am I trying to do with this? And that to me, you're right, it's both a huge opportunity, but boy, at a city level, that's also, well, I guess at a city level, it could be really healthy, but you get beyond that, you start wondering what exactly is being done here. I want to turn our attention for a second to some of the biggest growth cities in the world, which are not necessarily cities that might be aging or more established like a Tokyo or even a London or New York, but instead cities that maybe people haven't paid as much attention to like Dhaka and Lagos, and many of them are in the global south. Can you give us a little sense of what's happening in the global south and what sort of cities capture your attention and are growing or changing in significant ways?
Looking at projections, like the future urbanization won't happen in the western part of the world. It would happen in the global south. I think, I can't remember the numbers, but the growth that Lagos is supposed to have is massive over the next coming decades. It's going from 80 million by 2100, which is like, what is that? What kind of city is that even? It's like grasping what that would look like. It's a challenge because also the way the city is looking now with informal settlements and everything. But I think that a lot of the conversations we need to have, because also due to, I actually want to bring in climate change, is that we are building so much. And so how will we sort of meet all the things we need to do to mitigate and adapt to climate change if we have that type of urban growth in the global south? So I think there's a lot of conversation we need to have in the Western world, should we actually build? Because we have already had that type of urbanization. A lot of people already live in cities. So is that a reperception of how cities should develop in the Western world where we already have them? And then another way of looking at it, okay, so the cities that are now growing a lot, should there be other parameters that they can grow? We need to be more considerate of how we build our cities, but we also can't, because we have already had that kind of growth, and then we can't like, okay, but now we need to be more careful of like CO2 emission, material use, but people will move to cities in those parts of the world. So it's something we need to talk about. And I think that the conversation is starting, at least here in Denmark, around should we actually build? Because I think that coming also from architecture, we have this kind of idea that we need to build. But I think a lot of the conversation that we need to have in bigger cities, more established cities, is about urban mining, reuse, other ways of repurposing buildings that we already have, and then allow another conversation to happen in cities that will see an exponential urban growth.
Mm. I've definitely observed this in many parts of Europe, that the focus on reuse of existing structures, or I know that the Davos Declaration of 2018 included this reference to Baukultur, like the culture of buildings, like don't just create. It was kind of like this exhortation from governments to developers, please stop building these one-dimensional structures that aren't going to live in our cities very effectively over time once you're done with them. To the point where I've even heard a few anecdotal stories of architects and others walking away from projects where there's new building instead of using existing structures because the demolition is so bad, particularly in terms of embodied carbon with concrete, et cetera. So that's an interesting idea, Lisa, that the more established cities should perhaps focus more on reuse, while cities like Lagos are essentially building from the ground up because that infrastructure doesn't exist already.
And I mean, I think that countries or cities that have established more sustainable, regenerative, or better ways of doing should lead the way. And that could also come from any city around the world. But that cities that need to create infrastructure services or adequate and affordable housing, that's also something we need to have a conversation about and not just, you know, the we can't anymore, which we can't. But I think that burden should be put on other cities that already have a lot of things to, like where people already kind of live a good life, or at least a lot of them do, and then sort of try to be that a lot of conversation about, oh, but like we have a lot of resources, then use that to challenge the way we build our cities, because we can do it.
Yeah. Well, I think many of us are probably familiar with what we've seen in the press in years past of really fast growing cities, maybe in China or elsewhere, where there's concerns about the environmental impact of their growth or of the means by which they're being built. And Western cities or more established cities, through various global summits or whatever, putting pressure on them to be more environmentally sustainable. But that assumes, it gets back to the question we talked about before, that someone in those cities is actually managing this, that actually controlling this and setting standards rather than having it be primarily commercially driven. Is that kind of what you're seeing? Are there places in the global south where maybe there are a little bit more control or a little bit more intentionality about the way this growth happens? Or is it a little bit more bottoms up in terms of commercial interests and individuals essentially forming the future of these fast growing cities?
I mean, I know the mayor of the city of Cape Town is trying to look long-term when it comes to developing the city, for example. And I think there's a lot of places where, due to, for example, climate change, that, you know, you have to start thinking in those terms. But of course, I mean, and that doesn't only go for like cities in the global south, but governments are slow and it's sometimes tricky. And when I look to the future of city, I think the idea of citizen participation and how that could maybe be a force within urban governance to push them more. And that might be sort of a utopian ideal of how I want the city to be like. But I think that's quite important, because I think Copenhagen is a good example of where that might not be the case. There's this new development called Lynetteholmen, which is going to take place on the north of Copenhagen, which essentially is they are building a completely new island, which doesn't really fit into the whole conversation around sustainability and climate targets, because there's a lot of materials, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of CO2 emissions in that project. And a lot of citizens are not really that keen on that project. So how that kind of relationship can change and being challenged, because I don't think that the city's future should be determined by the few. I think that's a conversation that has to be around the many. And that's very tricky to establish, because we have a very top-down kind of approach to urban planning and urban governance in that sense. But to me, that would be a really great place to start.
Mm-hmm. Let's continue on this topic of climate and its impact on cities. I think of places like Bangladesh, perhaps, where, you know, really growing solid economy, but rising water levels are having a really direct impact on how their country and how their cities evolve. Are you seeing climate having accelerated impact on cities in places like that or elsewhere in the world, and what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, building on that with the climate versus all the other dimensions of city development, I do see that as one of the key questions as well, because climate has the potential to drive everything and be the single most important issue of all. But there's also scenarios saying, no, it will probably be less dramatic. So it will be a combination of climate and other concerns and considerations. I think lots of cities, including the ones you mentioned in Southeast Asia, they need to really look into the models and look at how will climate affect our city of Jakarta or Dhaka or whatever. And then, I mean, once again, there's an economic dimension to this, because even if we have a potential crisis, even if we have potential for almost disaster-like consequences for certain cities, there will probably be technical solutions to a lot of these issues. It would be wonderful if we had started diminishing the CO2 emissions 50 years ago, but we didn't. So here we are. And once again, the financial aspects, I mean, who's going to invest and pay for Dhaka or any kind of other city in the south? That will be an extremely important question. And I mean, this is basically what they're discussing in the United Nations right now. And then I would say the reason we have cities, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that people still see, even with the climate dimension, they still see city life as something they prefer compared to other ways of living. So how to keep a world in the south with better opportunities in the city centers? That is, for me, the overall question. And maybe 17% of that question will relate to climate. Maybe it's 80%, maybe it's 50, I don't know. But how to make the good life, as you say, Louisa, for the many people, For me, that's the dimension we have to go back to time and time again. And it's climate, but it's also work. It's also education. It's also health. It's all the services that we have in our cities today. A couple of years ago, we've always said there's no alternative. I think it was Shell who invented that term, Tina. Eh? There's no alternative. And then they talked about demographics or digitalization or whatever have we. But I still think or still see cities as a Tina thing. There is no alternative. Correct me if I'm wrong here. Let's remember that there'll be 2 billion more people on this planet 30 to 40 years from now. That's just how it is. We cannot stop that. And they need to live somewhere. So the alternative to cities getting bigger, maybe not only the Lagoses and the Dakars and the Mumbais of this world, but also second tier cities. I don't see a scenario where we can say to each other 30 years from now, oh, we were wrong.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember the exact year, but I think it's been fairly recently that mass urbanization tipped the scale from more people living in rural areas to more people living in cities, probably certainly within the last 20 years for the first time, as far as we know in human history. And so I think you're right, Karsten. There's probably no likely reverse. And I'm someone that loves living in a city. I think most of us probably do. We just want to make sure these cities are as enjoyable, livable, and sustainable as possible. Well, let me use our remaining time to turn to a slightly different topic here, which is I want to make sure that our listeners know about CIVS and about the resources that you make available, because I've benefited greatly from it. But I also just want to touch briefly on the topic of foresight work. Foresight is a topic that's gaining interest within the world of architecture, interior design. I was just on a panel for a large trade show in Chicago called NeoCon talking about foresight work. Can we just take a moment to talk about the value of a foresight project, and in particular, how we can use scenarios to maybe not predict the future like we talked about before, but understand possible futures in new ways?
I think scenarios, like future studies in general, have so much potential within design and architecture and all of those fields, because it's, in a sense, it shares a lot of the same aspects. It's creative, it's explorative, it's co-creation. And I think when it comes to scenario planning or scenario building, for the first, scenarios are, for those who don't know, it's like stories around the future. M. Young puts it very beautiful when he says that the reason why it's such a powerful tool is because we're all literate in stories. It helps us to imagine what the world could be. It's a shared language. So it's a lot of potential because it just helps people to understand what you're meaning. And it helps them see what the future could look like. And I think another important aspect is that, for example, when we look at the IPCC report, it's a lot of data. It's a lot of research. It's very heavy. So it can be hard for people, like when it says like, oh, in X amount of years, we will have a sea level rise of 50 centimeters. How would Copenhagen look with that? I have no idea. That's where like the story can become really powerful, because we can fill it with lives and emotions and set the scene for what that future actually could look like instead of just being numbers. Scenarios can help people to challenge, provoke, and have a more structured dialogue around different types of alternative futures. Because I mean, at CIVS, we never say that it's just one future. There's multiple, like there's so many different alternatives and ways that the future might unfold. So scenarios is just a way to structure that discussion a bit and to sort of, okay, if we look at urban living, we might see this, but we might also see that. And in that uncertainty, what might we need to prepare for? So it's a very good tool to start thinking more exploratory around the future and also in what direction you want to go. And I don't know if you have anything to add, Karsten?
Of course, fully agreeing here. One thing that's actually on the mind of CIVS at the moment is also when we talk about cities, we touch upon it, Ryan, in our conversation today, who's responsible for the future? And we have lots of discussions, also difficult discussions at CIVS at the moment, about who has a voice when it comes to talking about the future. And first of all, it's good that we start to think like this and actually be mindful about these issues. I'm not saying it's easy at all, but there is one thing, the voices. So who's actually being heard? And you can slice and dice that discussion in many different ways, of course. And then the other thing, okay, who is actually responsible for the future? It would be one thing to say, okay, but it must be the politicians, the mayor of a city, and she will have like this or that or whatever, some sort of strategy. But when it comes to city life as such, once again, the schools, the healthcare systems, the local community center, the daycare institution, the retail, etc., etc. Where is it actually that we come together in the city of Jakarta or in the city of Chicago on a neighborhood level? Where do you find the time and space and resources to have these kind of discussions? And I personally think we need these discussions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm grateful to be working with you on it. I had the privilege of working on the scenarios work as part of our foresight research when we were just Herman Miller, and discovered the power of telling stories about the future, just as you said, because it invites almost anyone in. If you were to just name a couple of movies that take place in the future, say take a Blade Runner or a Gattaca, those are the two that come to my mind, people can at least say one probably to me feels more likely than the other. Here's what I respond to. And so it democratizes some of this very complex information in ways that's really powerful. And now that we're Miller Knoll, we're thrilled to be working with both of you on thinking through the future of cities and bringing more of that to the people that we serve. So thank you for giving your time and your insights to us and our listeners today. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Ryan. Always a pleasure.